My guest, the largely libertarian thinker Eric Crampton from the New Zealand Initiative. Eric has been thinking and writing about an issue that's had a bit of coverage recently, and which we discussed with Nina Hall, Assistant Professor of International Relations at Johns Hopkins University a few months back. That is the idea of waiving the patents on COVID vaccines, the idea being that if the knowledge on how to make these vaccines was free to access, rather than being the subject of intellectual property rights, it would enable more countries to begin vaccination production and speed up COVID-19 inoculation around the world, especially in poorer countries. When I spoke to Nina, the United States was against waiving patents, but earlier this month, the US President, Joe Biden, announced a change of mind. Does Eric think that's a good thing? Well, he's here to answer that and other questions. Kia ora, Eric.
Good evening.
Welcome back to Nights.
Thanks for having me.
So, waiving patents, is it going to speed it all up? I mean, we could begin by asking you this even more basic question. What is a patent in the first place?
A patent is a strange kind of a property right. It's one that was invented by governments to try and encourage innovation. So you can get cases where it costs a lot of money to research and develop something. There are a lot of costs that wind up being sunk in that process. And if whatever you end up inventing is really easy for somebody else to copy once you've figured out how to do the thing, then that starts breaking the incentives for inventing things in the first place. If it takes a lot of time and effort to invent a pharmaceutical product in particular, but you can think about other areas too, and pretty simple for somebody to just wait for the inventor to have done all the hard work, take a look at it, reverse engineer it, and then put out their own copy of it.
Everybody's just going to wait, aren't they?
Yeah, everybody waits.
In theory.
In theory. So there are a couple of ways that people can try and prevent that from happening. Patents are one. They're the invented solution that governments came to hundreds of years ago. But there are other ones just through trade secrets, right? So often it's safer for an inventor to try and protect their invention as a trade secret rather than as a patent. If you put up a patent application, you have to list all the process, how the thing gets made, the recipe book, and then that opens up after 20 years and other people can follow along. But if you've got something like the formula for Coca-Cola or the secret herbs and spices for KFC, you don't need to patent that. You just don't tell anybody what they are. People can come up with their own versions of things, but they never quite taste the same. And if you'd patented it, well, Coca-Cola would have been generic 100 years ago, right? So trade secrets, if it's hard to reverse engineer something or come up with exactly the right process, that can be another way of protecting the intellectual property, right?
I'm sorry that this is a bit of a tangent, but I can't help myself here. Say somebody who works at KFC and actually needs to know the recipe decides to share it with somebody else, with a competitor. Is there anything legally that KFC can do to stop that? It's just a secret. Does a secret have a standing in law?
I would expect that the employee would be in violation of whatever their employment contract was.
Right.
And I would expect that they would have contracted to avoid that sort of thing.
So, yes, Coca-Cola the same. If you are employed with our ingredients section and you control what goes in, you sign a contract to work with us, you will not disclose the recipe of Coke Zero to anybody.
And then you get weird stories like, I think it's green chartreuse, the liqueur that apparently there's only 3 monks that know how to make it, and they're getting old, and apparently it gets passed on to the next one, but they commute to like some mountaintop monastery in the same little old car, so there's some risk there. But you can run secrets as a way of...
Wouldn't you want to work at the petrol stations, the last fueling stop?
Well, see if you can coax it out of them.
Yeah.
But you need ways of ensuring that whoever has invested all that costly effort winds up finding a reward from it. Now, listeners might be familiar with a concept called the Laffer curve. It's a bit...
Sorry, what curve?
I'm stepping back a little bit. The Laffer curve. So this comes in tax policy for economists. It's often horribly abused, but the original concept makes a lot of sense. If you have a tax... The Laffer curve relates how much tax revenue the government gets to what the tax rate is. So if the government sets a tax rate of 0, it's going to collect
nothing.
Zero money.
Yeah,
if
even I can work that one out.
If it sets a tax rate of 100%, it's going to collect nothing because everybody stops working. And somewhere between that, there's a level of taxation that maximizes the revenue to government. And Arthur Laffer argued that you want to make sure that you're not on the wrong side of the Laffer curve, where reducing tax rates would increase the government's tax take. Now, you get a lot of very bad economic takes that claim that reducing tax rates will always increase revenue. That's just nonsense. credible economists don't say that. Instead, they warn that, well, the amount of revenue that you might lose from a tax cut is a little less than you might expect. But bringing it back to patents, economist Alex Tabarrok argues that there's a very similar kind of phenomenon with patents, that if you've got no patents, you might have far too little innovation. But if you have far too strict of patent regulation, that you grant patents too easily, that you make them too expansive, that you have the duration of them for too long, that also can stifle innovation because you're balancing off the benefits of innovation against the cost of monopoly. And if new innovation builds on prior innovations, then patent thickets can start emerging that prevent innovation because you've got all these blocking patents. So in general, while I think that patent protection is a little overboard in general, I think it makes an awful lot of sense for things like pharmaceuticals, where you can spend $1 billion getting a drug to market through the FDA approval process. We've made it very costly to get new drugs approved. Some of that is necessary for safety. Some of it goes overboard in proving effectiveness. But the incentives to develop new vaccines in particular are a problem. They're items that, like the flu vaccines, they don't earn very much for the folks that put out new vaccines. Incentives to produce these have been generally fairly weak. We have, this past year, had phenomenal innovation in vaccines. And then we start thinking through, okay, well, what would the world look like if intellectual property was really what was blocking new development here? If we thought that the monopoly component of it was really restricting things, well, what do monopolists tend to do? They tend to restrict output so that prices can be higher than otherwise. Here we're seeing places like Moderna and Pfizer working flat out, sort of 24/7 production lines, trying to make as much as they can. You've got something like 20 different vaccines that are now on the market. They're all competing with each other for market share. Some of them are a little more effective than others, but for a lot of purposes, just getting a vaccine in the arm is going to reduce your risk, right? So it's hard to restrict your output to increase your price when you've got 19 competitors with similar kinds of products that are trying to get their, that are also trying to earn money, right? You do better in that kind of scenario by shipping as much product as quickly as you can. It doesn't look like a world where intellectual property is being a binding constraint.
However, we are in a world where there is inequality in terms of who's getting the vaccines first. And now, it might have changed since I spoke with Nina Hall about this topic, and she was very much in support of, well, she was advocating the idea that removing patents would speed up the introduction of vaccines, but COVID-19 yep. vaccines, especially in the developing world. And at that point, say 50% of the vaccinations had been in the USA, UK and the EU, and less than 2% in on the African continent. And yet the African continent has many more people. So sure. if it's not the patents that's stopping the removal of the property rights on the patent and sending the recipe to South Africa so a manufacturing plant can start up there without having to spend a lot of money buying the stuff from Pfizer or whoever might be making it, then what is holding out the spread of the vaccines?
It's interesting that you noted South Africa. AstraZeneca has already licensed its tech to South Africa for production there. So there are these licensing kinds of arrangements that are possible. And what's neat about a licensing arrangement is that it doesn't just give you all of the information that's in the patent and the permission to do it. It also gets you what's called tech transfer. Experts from the developer of the vaccine who know how to make the thing will show up at your plant and help walk you through the process to make sure that it ends up being successful. So these things can be pretty complicated. It's not just synthesizing a chemical compound like some of the generic drugs that are manufactured. There are biologic processes for generating some of the vaccines. The mRNA techniques are really new and finicky and take a lot of expertise to get right. And that's why we're not seeing as much licensing out of Pfizer and Moderna. Moderna had said back in October that they weren't going to be enforcing their patents over the duration of the pandemic, but nobody's followed on in building from their recipe book. So you can buy the cookbook from really famous restaurants, right? Like the French Laundry. You can buy their cookbook, but you can't just take the cookbook from a Michelin-rated restaurant and expect that you're going to have a Michelin-rated restaurant in your kitchen, right? You've got the cookbook, but you don't quite know all the techniques on how to do it. And that's the problem with just saying, let's relax the patents and then everything gets solved. We have these real process issues in trying to figure out how to replicate it. And there are also a lot of material shortages that aren't solved by just voiding patents.
Eric, why is it then that the United States, which when I spoke with Nina a couple of months back was against this idea, and one could understand maybe why, because it's the base through one or two large pharmaceutical companies, and they might not want to see their property rights eroded. So why is the U.S. turning around and supporting this idea now?
I really don't know the U.S. politics on this one. I'm suspecting that they're seeing it as not that big a deal where the actual replication of some of these vaccines through relaxation of patent would be difficult, so it won't really erode things that much. It may be part of domestic politics in the U.S., but it might prevent one of the... There are far better solutions, right? So where
yeah, what, if there is a... Do you acknowledge that there is a problem at the
Absolutely.
Moment?
So one big thing that the anti-patent people get right is that there's a desperate problem, there's a shortage of vaccines, and we absolutely have to get the whole world vaccinated as fast as humanly possible. Because as long as you're leaving billions of people unvaccinated, you've got ample opportunity for new variants to emerge that are going to circumvent existing vaccines. And then instead of getting into sort of a more laudable scenario where everybody gets vaccinated and we get regular boosters for new variants that slowly start emerging but have a hard time getting established because we already have existing protection, we wouldn't be in that world. We'd be in the world where we're always playing catch up with big new waves that are coming through. Absolutely important to get vaccines to poor places. Now, the way that you can do that instead is either through a full stack buyout, which would then involve licensing, but has
a full tech buyout.
Yes.
Now, how does that work?
Okay. There are two basic ways that you can handle this. One was recommended by the Progressive Policy Institute in the United States about a month ago. They were suggesting that rich country governments buy out the entire tech around these vaccines, along with the expertise of the people who develop them, so that they can get those experts out to the plants everywhere in the world right. to assist them in getting production.
So you're buying the intellectual property.
You're buying the property and you're buying the expertise.
Buying the people who actually yeah. know how to make the recipe.
That's right. So if you just void the patents, you might have some difficulty in convincing the cooks to go out to all the different restaurants in the world and teach them how to do it. I don't quite know how you'd affect that. There are going to be a lot of real technical difficulties in getting that set. If you do a full tech buyout, then you're also buying the expertise, but you're still going to run into the same additional problems that the manufacturers are already hitting in their licensing arrangements, that there are bottlenecks in production processes, that there are real materials that are short. So it looks like there's some plastic bioreactor bags that are short in India. There's a lot of vaccine production that goes on in India, but there are fundamental building blocks that are missing, and people haven't found ways to innovate around those yet. So with some of the biologics, I understand that you can do some of the growing of the cell cultures happens in these plastic bags that are specially designed. Those are short, and the American administration had put some export controls on those because they saw shortages for domestic manufacturing.
Right.
So
Do we get around those kind of problems, Eric?
Well, the way that you do that is through another mechanism. Spending a whole pile of money from rich country governments to contract for capacity for vaccine production. So if rich governments...
Is this during or pre-pandemic?
Do it right now. You could do it right now. It's not that different from what's going on with COVAX, right? So New Zealand has contracted through the COVAX facility in coordination with the WHO and others to buy a lot of vaccines for distribution to places that need them, right? Laudable. Contracting for capacity takes that a step further. So it'd be saying that if you can deliver the capacity to produce one more vaccine dose per year ongoing, we're going to pay you an amount of money for that. But you need to contract for billions, right? So when Tabarrok and Susan Athey and other co-authors on this were doing some of the analysis on it, it was published in Science recently, they were estimating that every dose of capacity, so the capacity to make one more dose of the vaccine per year, the value of that social benefits is between $580 and $980 per year US. So That was the total capacity was worth that, not per year. If right now you can go into COVAX and buy another dose of the vaccine for about $10, and you could do that right now as an individual, I already have. You might want to if this is something that you care about. You can go on right now online. I can send Brian the link later. Maybe he can put it up. Donate $10. They'll buy a vaccine for somebody.
We're talking about crowdfunding, right?
Yes, in addition to everything the governments are already doing. So if you don't think governments
are doing
it,
it's big governments have got to do this.
Big governments are doing it. You can do more.
What's New Zealand doing?
We have contributed substantially into the COVAX fund. I think a little bit less than the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. I was looking at some of the rank orders of these. The Mormons in the U.S. have contributed more than the New Zealand government, or at least had as of the date that I looked at.
Mormon economy is probably quite big, actually.
Well, taking it back to contracting for capacity, which is a little bit different, you're paying the companies to develop the capacity to keep putting out these vaccines, right? And when there's a lot of money that comes into it this way and they can't get it unless they actually have this capacity, that generates innovation in solving these bottleneck problems, right? There are just crazy things that show up in the supply chains that you wouldn't have thought of. Tabarrok points to the inner lining of the bark of a South American tree as being critical in some of these processes. It winds up facilitating some of the chemical reactions. But there's only so many of these trees around, right? If we can find new ways to get around some of these bottlenecks, which can be encouraged if you're actually paying people to do this, so there's strong incentives for it, instead of just saying, well, we're going to take your patents away and we're going to make you do it, doesn't solve anything.
Is the world keeping up with, in terms of spending, enough in terms of capacity at the moment?
Clearly not. The cost of a new vaccine, another dose of the vaccine, is at least an order of magnitude less than the benefits of getting it up. We should be spending an awful lot more to get everybody vaccinated in a hurry. That's where I'd share common cause with the campaigners, but they're doing it the wrong way.
So maybe Joe Biden waived the patent because that's a cheaper option for the U.S. government.
Well, it's not cheaper in the long run because governments are spending collectively somewhere on the order of $1.5 trillion per month in fiscal stimulus and trying to get around the consequences of having a pandemic. You could spend billions to save trillions. It seems a little crazy not to be doing that.
Eric, always fascinating having you on. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Eric Crampton from the New Zealand Initiative, back with more largely libertarian thoughts in about 10 weeks from now.